That's more like it, Curtis. There we go. That's what the morning show is about. Little bounce right there. How you feeling, DeMarco? It's a couple of hours.
I'm feeling terrific, man.
Pretty good. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yes, I know. And that means we're close to football season.
That's right. I hope. yeah, well, we'll get to that in just 1 second, especially the college football season. I'm looking at my TV right now. Did you see that highlight of the Angels last night where one of their really highly touted prospects, a guy by the name of Joe Adell, was credited with something that I didn't even know was a thing? I like to fancy myself a baseball guy. I watch a lot of baseball. I really love baseball. I did not know that there was such a thing as a four-base error. Did you know that?
No, there's a four-base error. I'm learning something.
There's four-base error. Joe Adell, there's a fly ball. They're playing the Rangers yesterday. Fly ball hit to right field. Adell's moving back on it. He's standing basically right in front of the warning track, right about where the grass meets the dirt. Ball hits him in the glove and bounces over the fence for a home run. But it's not a home run. It's a four-base error. yeah, exactly.
Wait. So I go back. Remember when the ball bounced off Canseco's head?
Uh-huh. Also, that's a considered error, apparently. I guess.
Is that considered a home run? If it's off the glove, it's an error.
Yeah, the Rangers were upset because it wasn't scored a home run, that it was officially scored a four-base error. This is a guy that's brand new to the major leagues. He is a very highly touted prospect, but I've watched it no fewer than 400 times. It's just perfectly Angels of their season that, you know, in the season where basically everybody's going to make the playoffs, the Angels are not, that they have the worst record in the American League and they're committing four-base errors. It's just hard to watch.
Okay. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant, right?
Exactly. All right, so back to football right here. We saw it last night. We talked to Adam Rittenberg about it a little bit earlier today, and it's starting to feel a lot like there's not going to be any college football this fall. We've seen that there's been some programs that have said no. We've even seen some of the smaller conferences like the Ivy League. We know that the MAC conference recently decided we're not going to play football in the fall. And now the commissioners of the Power Five are all getting together saying, yeah, we don't know if this is a good idea. It feels, DeMarco, like we're getting ready to pull the plug on college football, period.
Well, the MAC and the Ivy League, I mean, sitting out, that's one thing. But, I mean, when you start talking about the Power Five conferences, talking about sitting out, now you're going to move the needle. Now people are going to really get interested in what you're saying. So, you know, Dominic Foxworth brought up an interesting point. I saw this on Twitter. And I want to bring it to light. And I think he's right. When the players wanted to unionize and it was kind of put down, I think you're paying for that now because, like we said earlier in the show, this kind of underscores how little communication there's been between the players and the powers that be. I mean, we're almost, a couple of weeks away from kicking off, and you still don't know. You still don't know if you're going to play. This is kind of a mess right now, but, you know, as a football person who loves college football, I want to see college football on the field, but not at the risk of a young player's health. You said this earlier, and I agree with you 100%. The pros, they're not getting paid to play. I don't want to put these guys at risk just to end me. So I'm kind of with the players, but when you follow the money, there's just too much money out to say there's not going to be college football this Saturday fall.
Yeah, the money is the part that is going to make this decision, unfortunately, because the administrators are not going to do the right thing for the right reason. And the reason I feel comfortable saying that is because they never have before. This is not going to be the first time that they make, you know what, let's do the right thing for the kids. So today is not the day. I have DeMarco, you'll appreciate this because you're a father as well. I have this discussion with my wife all the time when, you know, she'll get frustrated with the kids. Like, I can't believe they left the towel on the ground, or I can't believe I said, today is not the day they're going to act different than every other day of their entire life. Today, I don't know why you thought today was the day that they were going to act like normal human beings. That's not how this works. They are exactly who they are, and you're the one that's being unreasonable by expecting them to be different. So I'm kind of taking the same approach with the administrators. And college football coaches are all exactly the same. They might come in a little bit different personalities here and there. Some guys are a little more serious. Some guys are a little better senses of humor or whatever. But at the end of the day, they all have the exact same mindset, and that is, I'm going to do whatever the hell it is I need to do to win this game. And if that means our offensive line play has been terrible. You get those guys in here, you sit them in a room, and we're going to go over this film over and over and over and over and over again until they get it. So, you know, this idea of, well, you know, coach, social distancing guidelines saying we can't be in an enclosed space for more than 15 minutes at a time. You think they're going to listen to that? Of course not.
No, no.
Of course not. They're going to go do whatever they want. So it's going to be dictated by the money. And it's not just how much money you're going to lose, because we know it's about $78 million per Power 5 team that's going to go out the window if you don't play a football season. It's $78 million versus how much might we lose if we get sued by a bunch of these players and lose. That's the math that's going on right now.
No doubt. And look, I had coaches, and I love UW, and nothing bad to say about anybody there, but I had coaches tell me, if you have a class, I don't care if it's a medical class or whatever, if you have a class that interferes with practice, you will miss that class. And they told me that to my face. So it's all about winning. We know this. But, you know, there are a lot of guys, a lot of players that need to play. There are some guys we talk about at the top, like Trevor Lawrence. We talk about him and his draft stock. Well, I think it's set in stone where he's going to be drafted. He's going to be a top five, possibly the number one pick in the draft. But there are other guys that need to improve upon their draft stock. They need to get on those lists. They need to play football this season. For as many people as they're saying that we don't want to play, or we should sit out, or we should opt out, or it's not safe enough, there are a lot of guys that would say, the heck with that, let's just go ahead and play. We have to live with this new normal. I want to play football. So I'm kind of with on that. As a parent, I don't want to send those kids out unless you can ensure me that you're going to keep them safe, or at least as safe as possible within this pandemic.
You know, and this comes back to another issue that college football is fairly unique in dealing with, and it's not a good one. There isn't a singular voice, right? That if the NFL, for better or for worse, Roger Goodell is going to call the shots in conjunction with his owners, right? He's going to consult with his ownership, and they're going to make a decision about whether to play or not. Adam Silver is making the decisions for the NBA. Rob Manfred is making the decisions for Major League Baseball. College football's boss is nobody, right?
The TV
one guy
networks.
Runs the Pac-12. One guy runs the Big Ten. The TV networks certainly have a say in this stuff, but no one's making a decision for, okay, this is what we're going to do. So everybody's kind of flying on their own, and there's just no way to get this entire thing. This is how we're going to go. We've seen the players come together, Big Ten, Pac-10, and say, this is what we want. We've seen some ACC guys, Trevor Lawrence, say, this is what we want. This is how we'd like to go forward and play. There's zero leadership in this sport. We've seen it all the time. But they can't even get together on how to do a playoff or any of this other stuff for decades. To think that they're going to execute this with a singular voice, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, it is almost impossible. I think it kind of underscores what we've been saying a lot about the NCAA, about college football in particular, about amateur athletics. Just call it what it is. You know, just call it what it is. And I think what's happening now in this new normal that we're living in is exposing a lot. Like you said, there's no one singular voice that can make that determination. Maybe there needs to be from both sides. And you mentioned the NFL. Roger Goodell does call the shots to a certain extent. He is the commissioner, but they do have the PA, the NFLPA, the Players Association, that also has to answer or be in lockstep with Roger Goodell, or the players won't go out there and play. So I think what you're seeing are the players trying to take some ownership of college football, trying to help out or at least have their voice heard, and so they can put their two cents in with the commissioners before there's a decision made. They need to be consulted. They're the ones going out. They're the ones putting their health at risk for the school to make money and for everyone else's entertainment. You should consult them as well, and I'm glad they're doing that. But, you know, like I said, eventually, no matter what the players say, conference presidents and the commissioners decide they're going to play. They're going to play football no matter what happens.
What would you do if yourself or your son or whoever was a projected first round draft pick and pretty secure in that. Maybe not, you know, top five, but you're going to go in the first round, and at worst, you're going to go in the early second round. We're going to play football in the spring. Do you play? Because you couldn't drag me out there at that point. I'm not doing that. Would you go?
Well, if you're like a, let's take Jadeveon Clowney, when you just knew from the time he was in high school that he was, that college football was just a stopgap and you don't need a junior or senior season, absolutely. Take a step back, come on home, we'll get ready for the draft. I would feel comfortable in that as long as you're heading towards your education or getting your degree. That's also part of it. So it just depends on where you're at and who you are. If your draft stock is, if you can't raise it any higher, you're only out there for a national championship or a Heisman or just gravy on top of an already great college career, then let's take that back if they're so unsure. But if you're a guy that needs to raise his draft stock, or this is your first year as a starter, you've been toiling away as a backup for four seasons and you finally get a chance to play, I can't tell you to come home. All I can tell you is stay as safe as you can, because I know you want to play. And the last thing I want to do is rip that from you. So that's the thing with football. There's a lot of different guys at different stages in their life, and some guys are going to move on and play. Some guys aren't. So it just all depends on what this season means to you.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Let's say that there is a season, but it's in the spring. And let's say that spring season, the decision comes with it that a bunch of the star players decide, you know what, I just can't risk it. I am very close to my NFL dream and everything that comes along with that. I'm going to not play. And if the football without the star players goes out there and looks more or less like we would expect it to look, that kind of throws a whole wrinkle into this whole process, doesn't it? Because it does feel like we're at a moment in time where the players are starting to understand their power, where they're starting to understand that if they are organized and do things together, they can move the ball down the field. They can get some of the things that they want. But if we have a bunch of the stars opt out and the football kind of looks like it is and people are still excited to go to a USC game or Ohio State game, some of that power goes away, doesn't it?
Well, if you do move it to the spring, and let's say you're Trevor Lawrence, where there's certain things that you're just not going to ask me to do because I'm not going to do them. If you want me to run the football, I'm not doing that. If you're one of these top flight defensive ends, you might only get me for two quarters a game if you move it to the spring. Because, look, now I'm really sacrificing my future or putting my future in jeopardy by playing here for free when I have a chance to move on and make millions of dollars. So there's going to be concessions. So it's going to be everything that's not geared towards winning. It's going to be more towards player safety or more towards self-preservation. There's just some things you're not going to be able to do or want them to do if you move this to the spring with some of these top flight athletes. If you have a Heisman Trophy candidate that's willing to come back and play and risk his draft stock, like I said, you're not going to get that same sort of game out of him, and nor should you expect it. Why would you ask a kid to do that, to keep running the football as a quarterback when you know he could, you know, take a hit and ruin his life? But if he comes back and plays, you might only get two or three quarters of me, and you won't see any fourth quarter out of any one of these guys.
All right, JB Long, the voice of the Rams, he's going to join us next. We'll get you ready for the Rams season, which is coming up fast. That's straight ahead on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, we're going to track down JB Long here before too long, and we'll have a Rams conversation with him coming up in just a bit. But DeMarco, let's start right here. The Rams, like we talked about, coming off of a 9-7 season, which on the heels of winning the conference and going to the Super Bowl was a disappointing season. And the main pieces are back. Aaron Donald is back. And you've got Jared Goff, obviously, is still going to be there. Robert Woods, Andrew Whitworth, some of the bigger names are going to be there. But there's a lot of turnover. No Todd Gurley, no Brandon Cooks. Corey Littleton is gone. Your coordinators are all gone. That's a lot of turnover in one offseason, isn't it?
No doubt. A lot of turnover. I mean, especially the Todd Gurley thing. He did so much to the locker room, so much to the guys, and he's not here. So that was going to be tough to get over. But you know, sometimes, Travis, and this is sometimes, missing the postseason can be a blessing in disguise, because after you win a Super Bowl or you're in the Super Bowl, that offseason is so short. You really can't catch your breath. You know what I mean? Mm. And you're everyone's big game. So with a full offseason, you actually have a chance to step away from the game and recharge your batteries a little bit. So, you know, hopefully you'll see some of that, you know, going forward. Yeah, there's going to be, but which the guys – and first guy you bring up is a guy like Aaron Donald. I know we talk about him a lot, but you have to talk about him because he's so good. I asked some guys around the league in Seattle, San Francisco, what is it like against Aaron Donald? And they all said it to a man Monday. And not like he had.
You know, I'm going to jump in on you, DeMarco. You're kind of cutting in and out a little bit on me right here. I mean, plus, JB is on the line. JB Long, of course, is the voice of the Rams. You hear him right here on every single Rams game. JB, how you feeling?
Travis, good morning. And to my friend DeMarco as well. It's nice to hear you guys. Feels like football is a day closer hearing your voices.
It does, and we're all very, very excited about it. Before we get to the Rams, and I definitely want to spend a lot of time talking about that, but you also do work for the Pac-12 Network. Are you optimistic, pessimistic about a college football season? Where do you think we're going to get, if anything?
Well, I think based off of what I went to sleep on last night, what I woke up to see this morning, optimism is probably a hard sentiment to be experiencing right now. I know the league's presidents are meeting tomorrow, and I imagine there'll be a lot more clarity at that point in time. I empathize with with what they're wrangling with, to be honest. It's the same thing that our society and all of us are contending with on the family front with our professions. But the nuance of college athletics just adds so many more layers to that onion. And it has been interesting to kind of watch the college experience, maybe become a little bit more dim in terms of their hopes for starting a football season on time, as the NFL is seemingly building some momentum and some confidence with the systems and the protocols that they put in place. So those things are, as we speak this morning at 8:20 a.m., a little bit divergent right now. So, no, I would not use the word optimism, Travis.
JB Long joining us here on the morning show. JB, let's go to the Rams right here. And could you look at it that the Rams maybe have a slight advantage coming into this preseason because it's so different than what we've seen at all, but the Rams haven't really been playing any of their guys for the last couple of years anyway? Could this be an easier transition for them than some others?
Well, I think you kind of have to parse that into the phases of the game. I mean, I think on offense you can make that contention because there are so many returning pieces and they have great continuity there. And Sean McVay, I think, has proven through 3 years an aptitude for kind of handling adversity and turning adversity into something that his group can rally around. But, yeah, when you have as many offensive linemen with starts last year, even in adverse circumstances, and Jared back at quarterback, and really just be looking to replace Todd Gurley at that one position, that receiver, I think that can certainly play to their advantage early in the year. But I think you would have to make, you know, the converse argument on defense, where you have a new scheme, play caller, new coordinator, and a lot of turnover on that side of the ball, a lot of household names at all three levels that you're trying to replace on that defense. Likewise on special teams. So net-net, I'm not sure that it plays out collectively and aggregate in the Rams' favor, but if you did want to hone in on the offense and kind of them finding their rhythm early in a season, you know, September 13th on the Sunday Night Football game against the Cowboys, yeah, I think you get expectations that they would be in sync relative to their peers.
JB, it's D. Farr. What's happening, man?
DeMarco, it's great to hear you, man. You know, if your experience for the last 6 months has taught me anything, I think we just need to skip 5G and go right to 6G.
Don't you think? 100%. Yes, I'm right there with you, man. Oh, no doubt.
I can't walk around my house and have a phone call. I know this is 2020, but it doesn't feel like it more ways than one.
I'm right there with you, man. Hey, speaking of Jared Goff, and I wonder what Sean McVay and Jared Goff can do for an encore to an encore. It seems like a lot of people want to say that the NFL have caught up to Sean McVay, and I don't think there's a more hated on player in the NFL than Jared Goff. So I wonder, have you seen any of that? Have they talked about any of that with you about what the naysayers are saying? Anybody outside the building, is it getting into Sean McVay and Jared Goff?
Not that they would let on to, DeMarco, but I think you and I know those guys well enough to appreciate the fact that any added fuel to the fire is something they'll use. And Jared, I think, was transparent last night in a virtual tailgate saying that, you know, he really does want to have 3 targets go over 1,000 yards receiving this year. So that's more of a statistical ambition than I've ever heard him offer. And I think Sean McVay built some confidence in December in what they were able to do, with the exception of that Cowboys game offensively. And I also think they have some peace of mind with what they've assembled up front. And maybe that area more than any other is where they have a higher degree of confidence. Perhaps not, perhaps it's a bit of hubris, we'll see. But I think by standing pat along an offensive line that was not well thought of at the end of last year was a sign of them doubling down on a group. And maybe the biggest part of that is bringing Austin Blythe back at center to give the Rams more of a John Sullivan-like supercomputer at center to kind of be that liaison between Goff and between Sean McVay and take some of the bandwidth in terms of protections and assignments off of Garrett's plate so that he can focus on what he does best. I think a lot will be said in the coming weeks and this month ahead before we play a game that this is a referendum year for both of those men you questioned, Jared and Sean. And I think there's an element of that. I'm not sure that they would agree with that assessment, but they'll probably go out and try and perform as if it was.
JB Long, voice of the Rams, joining us here on the morning show. Like you mentioned about the continuity on offense is one thing, but there's been not just players, but coaches, coordinators moving on to different spots, going into retirement. What's the biggest challenge to replace? Is it Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks, Wade Phillips, John Fossil? What is the biggest challenge for Sean McVay?
You know, I think in terms of personnel, it probably falls between either Dante Fowler or Corey Littleton, because I think the linebacker group is the one that I have the most questions about. There are some viable options there to replace, but if you are telling me that you're just going to swap out Dante Fowler for Leonard Floyd and get the same amount of production playing in tandem with Aaron Donald, I'm not sure that without an offseason program, that's a realistic expectation. You know, likewise, an undrafted college free agent like Corey Littleton and have him evolve from an outside linebacker to a Pro Bowl special teamer to someone who is one of the best coverage linebackers in the middle of the defense for every snap. I'm not sure that you can just say, well, we have another pool of candidates led by Micah Kizer and some other college free agents that we think we can recreate the same thing. I think a lot of NFL defenses have made the budgetary decision to cut a corner at middle linebacker. I think from a salary cap standpoint, it's fair to say that position has been devalued in some organizations, and the Rams are making conscientious decisions with that in mind, I understand. But I think that more than anything, personnel-wise, stands out to me. And then you do have to kind of just reconcile with the fact that Brandon Staley is very well thought of. I think there's reason to believe he can and will be the Sean McVay of defense here in the coming seasons. But that is as of yet unproven. And to have a first-time NFL play caller leading your defense, replacing Wade Phillips in a summer in which you will not play a preseason game is really intriguing. And I think it means more than anything that Sean McVay, the play caller, will have to vet Brandon Staley at Cal Lutheran behind closed doors so that he is ready to go against Dak Prescott and the Cowboys a month from now.
When you say intriguing, does that mean oh blank?
I mean, it's a thought that could go through our mind on that first Sunday night if things don't go accordingly, but I think it's just as likely to go the other way. You know, look, you know, a lot of people were expecting to say, oh, blank, when the Rams hired the youngest head football coach in NFL history, and that worked out okay. So I think and the organization are justified in wanting to pay that forward and find the next, you know, ascending star in the coaching ranks.
Well, you're always my go-to guy on this because you pay attention to it. What's the starting point when you're talking about signing a guy like Jalen Ramsey? Like, what kind of numbers are we talking about?
Record setting, market breaking.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at the average annual value, but I imagine it'll come close or start with a two. And I guess the most the sign of progress and perhaps he was just being playful with us is Jalen was allegedly in his car out house shopping last night on a Sunday in Los Angeles area. So despite all of the circumstances we're dealing with and the salary cap uncertainty for the short-term future, hopefully he feels confident enough to purchase a home and settle on being a Ram for a long time.
Very quickly here, JB, before we let you go, and this is a little bit off topic, how do you think Cam Newton's going to do in New England with Bill Belichick?
You know, I read kind of competing thoughts on that, where, you know, his starting spot is not even assured. That would be hard for me to believe. Wow. That he's not going to get every opportunity to be the starter there. And based on, you know, his commitment and his mentality from everything I've heard from him, I think he's going to give it his very, you know, his level best. And if he's physically right, I can't imagine that would be enough to be the starter in New England. But, you know, there's also these kind of conspiracy theories that they want to tank for Trevor Lawrence and all these other things. And I can't see that happening in New England under Belichick's leadership. I think he's more inclined to prove that he's capable of doing it without Brady. And in my eyes, at least, you know, Cam Newton gives him that opportunity and gives him an element that that he hasn't had with Tom in a lot of regards. So I find him to be maybe the most intriguing coach quarterback marriage going into this season. And I just wonder if by the time the Patriots get here down the schedule at SoFi Stadium, he'll be the one, you know, leading them into Los Angeles.
JB Long, the voice of the Rams. JB, it was good to hear your voice. I look forward to talking to you again before too long. Thanks a bunch.
Travis, have a great week. And DeMarco, hope to maybe even.
Yeah, absolutely. See you soon, man, at camp.
All right, DeMarco, I want to get your thoughts on that as well about Cam in New England and the idea that maybe he's competing for a job. That seems a little crazy. Plus, good news, bad news if you're a Dodger fan right now. We'll give you both of them. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, DeMarco, so I'm going to need you to play amateur psychologist for me here, because I'm in a place that I don't want to be in. I'm not quite ready to step off the ledge, but I'm walking closer to it. Lakers have lost three in a row and looked bad doing it. They looked a little bit better against Indiana. LeBron looked like LeBron, which is comforting to be sure that he looked like he knows exactly what he's doing. But the rest of the Lakers have not looked anything like the Lakers pre-lockdown, pre-pandemic, pre-bubble. Is there a switch to be hit when they figure out who they're going to play in that first round, whether it's Memphis or whether it's Phoenix or whether it's Portland or whoever it end up might being, that when it's game one of the first round of the NBA playoffs, can I feel good about where the Lakers are, knowing what they've looked like in the bubble so far?
Yes, I would tell you to step back from that ledge, my friend, to use that song for a hot minute. I mean, as long as LeBron James, the guy, your best player, the best player in the world, is playing good basketball, you still have a shot to win against anybody. I don't care who it is. Name them. As long as LeBron is filling it up and being that guy, you still have a chance to win. And I think those other guys are going to come around. And even Frank Vogel said that, you know, he's holding some things back. They still have a playoff lineup that he hasn't rolled out there yet. So there's still some plans. I think they're playing it close to the vest. I think you have to be a little bit cagey right now with what's going on inside that bubble with the rest of the NBA as it pertains to the Lakers. So I would just say, man, look, as long as LeBron is doing his thing, you should feel comfortable in that. I understand your concern, but you still have the best player in the NBA in your uniform playing for you. So it's not all bad right now, no matter what you see.
Yeah, it's the shooting in particular. And again, it was better against Indiana over the weekend, in particular because Quinn Cook was knocking down some shots. But Kyle Kuzma was the one guy who was making shots. That's gone cold. He'd had a bad game against Indiana. He only made three of his 14 shots, 1 of 5 from behind the line. He did not look right. And I like I said before, I don't worry about LeBron, but when the ball's not going in the hoop, I know that these guys are better shooters than it's showing, but that stuff does tend to be a little contagious, and it does tend to kind of go in ebbs and flows. And if the ball's not going in the hoop, I'd like to start to see it go in the hoop before this thing starts, because I don't know about you. Take me through your sport, football, where if I'm counting on something to work and it's not working, I just don't sit there and wait for it to just kind of click in. In football, do you say, if I'm running a play, I said, this play is going to work, but it's never open, don't you kind of throw it away and look for something else? And that's kind of where I am with the Lakers.
And way back in 99, and at the end of the year, we had to go face Philadelphia, and we had already had the first round bye locked up, and Dick Vermeil was going back to Philly, where he's, you know, famous, where they love him there. So the week was a little bit different. It was a big departure in how we did things, and we didn't play a lot of guys that we should play, and Philadelphia wound up beating us for our third loss of that year. But it didn't affect us because we knew why. We knew why they beat us. We weren't playing guys. We didn't do the things we normally do. If we would have played our best game and our best people against Philly, we would have ran them right out of the building, and we knew that. So it did not affect us. So I kind of get that same feeling here. You have to be a little cagey. I mean, the last thing you want to do is, you know, show everybody what you're going to do and what you're going to be into the playoffs and give them a little bit of a leg up on how to stop you. So maybe you're going with a few looks that you're not going to go with in a few weeks. So it did not work out for you. I'm sure a lot of Laker fans like yourself are feeling like, wow, it's a 3-game skid, but I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, like I said, as long as LeBron is LeBron and he's looking like LeBron, I think everything is going to be just fine. I think they are a team, and he is a guy that can flip that switch when it matters most.
They're 2-4 in the bubble. One of the wins was against the Clippers, and it took LeBron being LeBron to do that. He needed to get that put back towards the end, and he D'd up not just Kawhi Leonard, but Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the final possession. So they win that game by a bucket. They look bad against Toronto. They beat Utah. That's the one game where they've kind of looked like themselves, and now they're on a 3-game skid. You get Denver tonight. You've got Sacramento at the back end on Thursday. That's their final game inside the bubble, and intellectually, I'm with you. Intellectually, I'm with you with the, hey, look, LeBron's LeBron. You're setting yourself up for anxiety for no reason, because when it's go time, LeBron will be there. LeBron's going to be able to do everything he's been able to do from the moment he's gotten in this league. Yeah, but my heart is telling me, guys, you've played 6 games and looked bad in 5 of them. You've got a game coming up against Denver tonight. Denver's a good team. There's a chance you could play Denver in the playoffs. Denver's a good team that you just can't keep laying an egg over and over again and expect all of a sudden just be ready to go. LeBron, sure. I'm not worried about it, but Anthony Davis has not looked good since the relaunch. Alex Caruso has been a little uneven. Nobody really has shot the ball all that well. They don't have Avery Bradley. They haven't quite figured that out. Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, still quite unsure how they're going to fit into this whole thing. And you only got a couple of games left.
I feel better about Anthony Davis than I do Caruso. I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm not sure. Anthony Davis has some good looks. He just missed. He really did. So if I can get those same looks and he starts to hit, it's a different ball game. So, you know, I'll give you that, Trav, to be honest. I mean, if they do struggle against Denver, or if they come away with an L against Denver, then I would say it's time to warm up the panic bus. And I wouldn't say start loading it up, but at least warm up the engine to see if it works. But if they go out and trounce Denver, like I think, like they're expected to, or like they should do, then, I mean, you're panicking over nothing. If LeBron is not hitting, if he's looking like he's laboring, if he's looking like he's tired or what have you, or if he's not D'ing up guys like he used to, then I would say it's fair to say get ready to start to panic, and this is a full-fledged, you know, free fall that they're in. But as long as I see that guy's box score and I see what I need to see out of him, I figure the rest will fall in line. And probably some of this has to do with strategy and coaching more than anything else.
You know, what would be fantastic would be if you and I, when we do the show tomorrow morning, we come in here and LeBron had his, you know, 28 points, 14 assists, and Anthony Davis had his 33 points and, you know, 16 rebounds or whatever it is, and the Lakers win a game against Denver tonight. Say they win the game by 12 or 14 points, and it's a nice, comfortable, easy win through the night, and everybody looks like it. KCP knocks down a couple of threes. Danny Green knocks down a couple of threes. Alex Caruso looks nice and comfortable. All the guys that we know are going to have to be a part of this. The Dwight Howard plays the role that he's played so well this season. I just need to see it once, because it's taken me a long time to get to this point where I'm going, okay, I think it's okay, but those little seeds of doubt are certainly in there. It'll only take one night for them to go away, and I'm hoping that tonight's the night, because this is exactly what my fear was coming into the bubble, DeMarco, which was, I know that LeBron's taking care of his body. I know that Anthony Davis isn't just sitting on his couch playing Xbox for 4 months. I know that these guys are doing what they need to do. But the fact of the matter is, when you don't play for 4 months, everything that was going right before, there's no guarantee it's going to go right after. None. It's too long. If it's a week, sure. 2 weeks, okay. It's been 4 months. It's almost like a new season. And you know, in football, baseball, basketball, whatever it is, doesn't matter. If you stop for 4 months, you have no idea what you're going to get when you restart it again. And that's where we are right now.
No doubt. But other guys around the league are playing well, and they've had the same 4 months off. So it's a little bit of, you know, trying to find it. But when they do, like you're talking about the one seed here in the West. Mm-hmm. So when they do find their stride, you're talking about a team that's in contention to win a championship. And I don't think they're very far off. And what you said, all you need to do is see it to feel better. Well, I feel the same way about that Laker squad, the guys that are actually in uniform. I think it's about time for them to see it and feel it. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like you said, they win this handily versus Denver. Like you said, 12 points, 15 points, 20 points, what have you. I wouldn't be surprised if you see them actually, you know, pull out all the stops and mash these guys. But like I said, I just have all the confidence in the world in whatever the Lakers are doing, as long as LeBron James looks like LeBron James.
All right, so a lot of familiar faces coming back for the Rams on offense this year, but number 30, no more. He's in Atlanta. How do the Rams replace Todd Gurley? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. There it is. Woo, woo. Good job, DeMarco. That just came right out. You are ready to go. DeMarco Farr is in with us all week long. And, of course, DeMarco, that means that it is football season, my friend. Or at least I'm crossing my fingers, my toes. I'm rapping on my desk and rubbing a rabbit's foot, whatever else you got going to hopefully get an NFL season. We'll get to the college problems that they're having in a minute. But any question in your mind before we get into the ins and outs of the Rams that there's going to be an NFL season, or at least we're going to start the NFL season on time?
I have no doubt they're going to start. I don't know if they're going to finish. I think everybody feels the same way. It's just, you don't know. It's unpredictable. I mean, we're in a pandemic situation, so it just depends on if you can keep this thing under control. If you can, then sure, you'll keep playing. But if not, then I think you'll have to take a step back and reevaluate. Crazy. I mean, what are we going to do on Saturdays in the fall now if there's no college football? Think about it. What are we really going to do? What are they going to put on TV to satiate us?
Okay, you ready? I have an answer for this.
Okay, go ahead.
And we're going to watch the NBA playoffs, as weird as that sounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Because the whole calendar is just up in smoke, right? That everything that we usually do in the spring and the summer has been postponed or canceled. Because keep in mind, the NBA playoffs start in a couple of weeks, okay? So we won't have the finals completed until the middle of October. So that covers all of September and October. We've got the Masters and the U.S. Open coming up later in the summer than we ever have before. We're going to have the NFL. We're going to have baseball playing through the end of October as well. So it's not going to be perfect, but at least everything else is kind of up and going, at least for the time being. So it'll be weird, because I know you and I both love college football, but we've got some stuff which will help.
Methadone for college football fans.
right. But the problem is, the real stuff, college football, it has me pretty bad, DeMarco.
I feel like I got
bugs on my skin. I need a little fix up. I need to get right when it comes to college football.
I look like Ray Charles. Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly right. No, it's been great, because there are a bunch of things. And I'll say this, the last kind of thing on this idea. I felt like baseball was done when the outbreak with the Marlins happened. And then the Cardinals happened. And by the way, the Cardinals are still happening. They still haven't played. I thought, okay, this is a wrap. This isn't going to work. We've been playing a week, and we basically had two teams that have to cancel their seasons or seemingly, you know, put it on hold for the better part of a week. We got through it. We got through. Not only are the Marlins back, but they're actually winning some games. The rest of baseball has functioned more or less normally, or at least as normally as you can under the circumstances. That baseball survived that first wave of infections gives me hope for football, because there's going to be infections. There's no way around that. But it's how do you respond to that I think is going to determine whether or not to have success. And baseball gives me hope.
Don't you think that baseball, though, if you lose a couple of key guys, you still have a chance to win just because of what the sport is. But if you lose a Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, you know, and you have to put in the backup, it's almost a wrap, wouldn't you say? So it's a little bit different. But even with that, even if you have to trot out the backups, it's still football and everybody has to go through the same thing. It is what it is. But I'm with you. There's going to be infections, but I think you still have a chance to keep playing. What's going on with baseball and the Marlins has given me hope, just like you.
Yeah, and you're going to, you know, Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate example. If it's Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or any of these guys, Russell Wilson, you know, any of these guys that are at the top of their game, especially quarterbacks in NFL, that's just a totally different dynamic. Obviously not coronavirus related, but the Rams have to replace Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley, you know, since the Rams have come back, I remember you and I meeting each other for the first time out in Irvine, and we're sitting there talking about it. And, you know, what are people in L.A. going to need to know about this team coming in? And it was Todd Gurley and Aaron Donald. You need to know about Todd Gurley and Aaron Donald. And they were the two best players on the team. Todd Gurley's down the road. He's in Atlanta right now. How do you replace a guy who not only is one of the best players on your team, but one of the best players in the league when he's right and such an important part of that offense? How do you do that?
By committee, I think you're going to have to split it up and go specific. I think you're, you know, Malcolm Brown is a do-it-all type of guy. He's got a lot of experience, but, you know, he's more of your inside. You're more first and second down type back, so to speak. Darrell Henderson would be kind of the backup to that, or maybe a third down specialist, a guy you would bring in to use in the passing game a little bit more when you want to get a little bit more creative. Cam Akers is kind of, you know, the guy we're going to kind of wait and see. What kind of a mold is he going to be in? But he's got all the tools, the skill set that Sean McVay likes to use from running backs. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's really good running screens. The Rams, if not 2 seasons ago, were one of the better screen teams in the league. And to me, that was the biggest difference in their offense. The screen game kind of disappeared last year. And I, like I said, I think that was more personnel-driven than play calling or execution-wise. So, I mean, I think you're going to have to – and Todd Gurley was he was a do-it-all guy. He was a guy that never have to leave the field. So I think you're going to see 34, 27, 23 in the lineup at different times for different scenarios versus what they want to do against different teams. So until one of those guys takes a step forward and presents themselves as a bell cow, a lead back, I think you're going to see all three in every single game this season or some variation of that.
You mentioned Darrell Henderson, who was coming into his second season. He came out of Memphis a couple of years ago, and we saw him a little in the preseason. We didn't see him much at all during the regular season. He really did not get an opportunity to contribute very often. Is that just a function of being a rookie running back, and in particular in that offense where pass pro is such an important part? You know, we talk about Todd Gurley's running ability. You talk about Todd Gurley's ability to catch the ball in the backfield. Todd Gurley was a good blocker. Todd Gurley did a good job in pass pro. Is that why you didn't see a lot of those other guys, why you did see more Malcolm Brown, because he wasn't going to get Jared Goff killed?
Well, this is more of a guess, but it's an educated guess. Look, you're not going to supplant Todd Gurley. He was the guy, and he was well paid. So Todd was going to take those reps. And Malcolm Brown knew more than you did about the offense. So it was going to be tough for him to crack that lineup. Well, Todd's gone now, so you're going to be in the mix. But what I did see out of Darrell Henderson, he can run that inside-outside zone. I mean, he sets that up well. He can really get to the outside and make those linebackers have to match him in a foot race to a certain point. And he can deal with contact on his when he wants to, on his terms. So he's a guy that if he gets past that first wave of defenders and into the second level, he can make some things happen. So he was just about there. He had the fumble against San Francisco that set him back, and then he rolled his ankle that set him back even further. So it was kind of a bad luck rookie season that most running backs tend to have, but you could see that speed and that burst. When he starts to really learn and know what he's doing out there, he's going to be dangerous, and he's going to get the reps in camp, and he's going to get the reps this season in the regular season to make something happen. And I would bet that he's going to.
What happened? You know, and I wish I had a more pointed question than that, but Todd Gurley was an MVP candidate for a couple of years under Sean McVay, and he just looked unstoppable. I mean, every time we would do the pregame show, we'd sit and talk. It's like, well, what's Todd going to do? You know, is he going to get a couple of touchdowns? Is he going to get his 100 yards? And he was just the most dynamic, explosive player on offense that they had. And he was the thing that made the whole engine go. I know he got hurt in that Chiefs game a couple of years ago and was kind of nursing some stuff, but all through the end of that season, in the Super Bowl, they didn't use him. In the NFC Championship game, they really didn't use him. And then fast forwarding the last season, there would never seem to be any sort of rhythm about how they would use him. And we speculated that maybe he was hurt. No one ever said, oh, he's dealing with this. They're speculated that there was something going on with the relationship between him and some of the coaching staff. We never got any clarity on that. Do we know why it just stopped? Because clearly the Rams wanted to have him around. They gave him all that money. It's not like they were never invested in him in the first place. They paid him like crazy. And then you fast forward a season and he's gone? What happened?
I think you're going to have to wait and see what he does in Atlanta. If he all of a sudden turns back the clock and starts to look like that guy, then it was more than just an injury. Right now, I'll blame it on the knee. I don't think he was ready to play physically. There were some body language issues that I noticed when he was on the sideline and when he was out on the field. He just wasn't the same guy. And everything was geared towards stopping him anyway defensively, so that's rough. And you didn't have your same five guys up front, so it was a little tougher for him. It was like going back to when Jeff Fisher was the head coach. Everyone was ganging up on Todd Gurley, so there were a lot of factors going against him physically. But if he goes out there and just rips it in Atlanta, then I guess you can start having those conversations. Maybe it was a little bit more. Maybe there was a personal issue, but as of right now, I don't know. As of right now, I will say it's just a physical thing, but if he starts to look like he loves football again, then it's fair to start questioning why you lost the love here in L.A.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you're trying to set it up for to have a season that's incredible by a player like that, Matt Ryan's a really good start. Julio Jones is a really good start because you've got a quarterback who's a bad man. You've got arguably the best wide receiver in football on your team that it's not just, okay, where's Todd? Let's deal with him. If you do that, Matt Ryan's going to kill you. Julio Jones is going to kill you. If he's the third guy you got to deal with, it feels like it's set up for him. Again, to your point, assuming he's healthy, it feels like he's going to go nuts.
Yeah, and Todd did rip it when he got those favorable boxes, when the box wasn't loaded against him. And, you know, he had some, you know, nice bursts, some nice carries. And, you know, he really got out in the open. You saw some vintage Todd Gurley towards the end of the year as well. So if you have a situation where the defense just can't key on him for those very reasons you just mentioned, you have to double AJ. You have to double what's going on out there in Atlanta. If you don't, they're absolutely going to torch you. So if he gets some favorable blocking schemes with some defenses that are a little vulnerable towards the run, he will absolutely torture you. He's a big, strong guy that can make you miss or run you over. So, but if he starts to look like he loves the game again, then like I said, let's revisit this, you know, say in October, if Todd Gurley is close to 300, 400 yards by then.
DeMarco, when did it hit you? When did it hit you that, you know what, the occupation that I have chosen, football player, professional football player, man, this blank doesn't last long. is it right away? Is it at the very beginning of your rookie season, or does it take some time?
When what? When I love this or when I start hating it?
No, when you just realize, you know what, I don't care if you're Todd Gurley, you could be on a different team next year. No guarantees for anybody.
I'd say every year around the draft.
Yeah.
Every year around the draft when there's a hot guy at your position. Yeah, you're like, oh boy, this could be really dangerous. Or you start seeing some of your teammates go unexpectedly. Like he was here. Let's say they put him on one of the tickets. Remember the tickets you get to go into a football game and they have certain players on those tickets?
Of course,
yeah. And he's on the press guide and then next year he's gone, or that training camp, he's gone. Yeah, that's kind of like, wow, this stands for not for long in the NFL. So, yeah, it happens. So, but you have to move on and you have to have pride and respect the next guy that's taken over. But, yeah, it's not for long with a lot of guys in the NFL.
All right, so that's the NFL. What happens to college football? Because it looks like we are not going to have a college football season, period. We'll give you the latest on that coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. But before that, another look at Monday traffic with Karen Kay. Karen.
Marco, Monday traffic, what a mess. Glendora, 210 eastbound, right before Monta Vista Fire Coastal, blocking three right lanes. We've got to clear an injury crash through there. And we still have that singular big issues through Long Beach. If that's you traveling the 91 westbound at the 710, it's an overturned big rig. It looks like it's a truck versus a car. Not good. And traffic is blocked from that southbound 710 connector. This report sponsored by ZQL Pure Z's. You have to be up in 5 hours, 2 hours, and you haven't slept. Vic ZQL Pure Z's is a drug-free blend of botanicals with an optimal dose of melatonin that helps you fall asleep naturally and wake up with no next-day grogginess. ZQL Pure Z's, naturally superior sleep. Karen K. 710 ESPN.